I'm Vermont Edition producer Sam Gale Rosen. This podcast has been edited for brevity, and we hope you like it.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. Dr. Dinosaur is Vermont's free and reduced-cost health insurance program for low- and middle-income Vermont children and pregnant women. It has more generous eligibility guidelines than Medicaid. And it turns out, the state has not been collecting premiums from everyone who's registered. A recent report from State Auditor Doug Hoffer confirms that since the rollout of Vermont Health Connect, the state's system for collecting premiums from Dr. Dinosaur has been broken. While the state continues to authorize and pay for millions of dollars worth of treatment for qualifying families, it has not kept track of who it's collecting premiums from or how many people have not been billed or have not paid those premiums. That's just one of the big issues the auditor's office has uncovered, and today on Vermont Edition, we're going to talk about some of the auditor's recent reports and investigations, as well as ones it's currently conducting. And I'm joined here in our Montpelier Bureau by State Auditor Doug Hoffer. It's nice to see you again.
Good to be here. Nice to see you.
So let me ask you to move right in front of that microphone. So Dr. Dinosaur, as I said, is this publicly funded health care program for children and for pregnant women, and it has this expanded eligibility guidelines. And so not everybody who gets Dr. Dinosaur has to pay any premium at all. But depending on your income level, some families do have to pay a premium. And that's where the problem lies, right? That the state has not been effectively figuring out what it's collecting and from whom.
That's true. This came about because we did two audits, performance audits of Vermont Health Connect several years back. And this was one of the issues that was outstanding. So we figured let's close the circle and go back and see if they've corrected this particular problem. And they have not.
And what is the problem exactly? Why can't the state determine who and how?
Yeah, that in itself is not complicated, but in fairness to them, they've had so many problems that I just think they didn't prioritize this. And in the scheme of things, although, you know, a million here, a million there, it adds up, I think they felt like they had bigger problems to address and resolve. Nevertheless, best practice and the state's own guidelines say that if there are a class of people that owe you money, you're supposed to try to get them to pay you. And in this case, they weren't doing very well.
And you said it's an easy problem to fix, but it perhaps hasn't been a priority. How would you fix it?
Well, I shouldn't have said easy because it's a little complicated, in part because there's a third party. There's a company now called WEX. That wasn't their original name, but they perform a number of functions on behalf of the state for VHC and Medicaid. And it's a little convoluted. I never understood it from the outset back when we first looked at VHC, but this is what they have, and they're sticking with it at least for now. And that entity, for example, if you as a consumer are obligated to pay $300 this month and you don't have it all and you pay them $250, they will not forward that money to the insurer. They will hold it. Furthermore, there are some rules about how they're supposed to divvy up that money, and the first tranche should go to Medicaid, and for example, to Dr. Dinosaur. They don't do that, and they don't do it because they've never been told or made to do it, and the state has allowed that kind of thing to happen. So there's a number of little pieces and parts like that that they haven't been able to fix. Now, they did try. So when the state said in their management response to the audit, well, we didn't do it because we didn't want to kick people off the program. Well, nobody wants to kick kids off the program. That's not what we're talking about here either. But they actually spent almost $2 million a couple of years ago in a contract with WEX. They did their part, but the state didn't do its part because all the pieces had to fit together. So that was a bit disingenuous. Anyway, they've tried. They haven't gotten it together. They told us that it's on track for fall of next year.
Fall of next year. Okay.
Yeah.
So given that the state doesn't really know, it sounds like, who it hasn't been collecting premiums from or who hasn't paid in full. Do we even know how much money the state has lost out on in terms of uncollected premiums?
No. To be fair, it's not a fortune. They know how much they've collected.
And how much have they collected?
Like less than $2 million each year that we looked at. But to be clear, the vast majority of people on Dr. Dinosaur are determined not to be able to pay a premium.
Right. Most people don't have to pay a premium
correct.
At all.
Correct. And these premiums are not that much. They're $15, $20, or $60 a month. That's why I say I think had many of them, who knows how many, been informed, by the way, you still owe us and this is what's owed, then most of them may well have paid. But if you're a low-income family and you're trying to make ends meet and nobody sends you a bill, You're not going to go out of your way to pay.
Frankly, if you're a high-income family, right. You're not going to do that either. But it's the low and moderate-income families that then especially the concern is if the fix includes going back in time, trying to figure out who hasn't paid and billing them later. Because you and I probably know, I certainly know from family budgeting, even if I was supposed to pay it in the first place, if that money has already been spoken for and you now tell me I owe hundreds, boy, is that going to be a problem.
Yeah, no, I see no reason for people to fear that. I have no reason to think the diva would do that.
Okay.
I mean, in fact, they've acknowledged that they're responsible for the failure to bill and collect. So having said that, which they have to, it's the truth, then there's no way they could bill back these folks.
All right. So what is the recommendation then? Just fix it by next fall and move forward? Lesson learned?
Well, we told them to fix it, and they know they need to fix it. That was known going in. Basically, we just documented some of the dollars and some of the details of the problems. But they were very clear. They said, we know we have to fix this, and we fully intend to. We have a long-term plan. This is part of that plan.
Given how much money the state spends and businesses spend and individuals spend on health care, is perhaps a couple of million dollars maximum that the state has lost out on in these uncollected premiums a big deal? Or is it like the you know, coins under the couch in terms of the overall health care budget?
The latter, for the most part. Nevertheless, the state has an obligation to meet the financial guidelines, and they haven't. And it's more than a few million because, as I said, they spent almost $2 million trying to fix the problem without success. They spent about $2.4 million in medical services for the folks who were not supposed to be enrolled, although I suspect that many of them probably would have met their obligations had they been asked and been pursued.
And when you say weren't supposed to be enrolled, you don't mean they weren't eligible. You just mean they perhaps were not up to date with their premiums.
Exactly. Well, no, they were not.
They were not.
And we were very generous as to the sample that we looked at. We said, let's not look at anybody that's not 8 months out. There's a 60-day grace period, and then we looked at people who were 6 months out with no payments after that. So there's a lot more than the numbers in our report. But, you know, I had a call from a colleague and friend before I walked over here today, and they said, gosh, you're not going to tell people that the state should do a better job of kicking people off Dr. Dinosaur. I said, no, that's not what I'm doing. So,
yeah, so you're not saying people shouldn't be kicked off, for non-payment. I mean, eventually, if we were keeping better track of it, that might be the result.
Yes, indeed.
So is there anything else before we leave Dr. Dinosaur that you're recommending or that we should know about this program?
No, I think that's pretty much all we have to say.
All right. So you and I have talked before about economic incentive programs. And I don't want to put words in your mouth, Auditor Hoffer, but the impression that you've given in the past, at least, is that you often don't think these are fiscally sound initiatives, or at the very least, they're untrackable. So it is unclear if we're getting what we paid for with things like, for example, maybe the $10,000 initiative for people to move to Vermont and start to work here, that kind of thing?
Among others, yes. Let me be clear. We issued a report last year that informed the legislature that while part of our job, my job certainly, is to help them in their deliberations about how best to allocate resources. That means, in many cases, that you have to evaluate the effectiveness of certain programs. And I pointed out that there are four or five programs that are very important to the Agency of Commerce that I can't evaluate for a variety of reasons. And I pointed out what they are, and we've discussed some of them before, VEGI and a few others, tourism and marketing, because there's no way to measure the effectiveness of those programs. And
it's not that you're not allowed to. There's just no way to do it.
Right. So given that, I encourage them to give some thought to the literature and what it says about other ways to spend money on economic development, because it's very important. Nobody can deny that. I certainly don't. So that was an important piece of work. The program you're referring to is under consideration right now. It came out of the Senate with a very strong vote and is now in House Commerce, and it's called the New Worker Program, to be distinguished from the Remote Worker Program. And one of the aspects of it that some claim is an advantage to the state is that it will produce new tax revenue. Well, in fact, if I'm retired or about to retire and my wife and I decide to sell and downsize and, you know, our wonderful house is available and you're in New Jersey and you want to come to Vermont and I'm going to give you 10 grand, you're going to move into my house, but I was already paying taxes. I was paying property taxes, income taxes, sales taxes, and so forth. So it's not new revenue.
Well, unless you downsize and you move to a condo, you're now paying taxes on the condo, but, you know, my family and I are now paying taxes on your old house. Isn't that added revenue?
Not if the condo was occupied as well. Unless it's new housing, right? And a new job. And that's another thing.
But isn't that the idea? This will spur new housing. It'll spur growth. We'll have to build more. We'll have to create new businesses because all these people are going to be coming in getting this $10,000 bonus.
All 50 or 60 of them, mm-hmm. right? Statewide. No, that's there's a lot of misunderstandings about what this program will do on the ground. When you talk about jobs, there's two pieces, new jobs and replacement jobs. When you retire, that job has to be filled. Or if you move to another job or are elevated within your own organization, those are called replacement jobs. And there's a lot of them, particularly as my generation ages out of the workforce. We've been filling those jobs. We've had almost 15,000 people retire in the last 10 years in Vermont. That's why the labor force numbers are down. All those jobs have been filled. And we created another 17,000. So the concerns about the demographics and what it will do to the labor force are not irresponsible. We should have that conversation. But there are people in Vermont who, according to the current population survey, want to work and for a variety of reasons can't. They live in an area where there aren't enough jobs. Their skills aren't valued. They're caring for a sick relative. They're called discouraged workers and the marginally attached and a whole large group of people who work part-time but would rather work full-time if a job was available. There's about 3,000 of those right here in Vermont today. I would argue that it makes more sense to identify them and help them before we start asking people from outside.
Given that you can't audit programs like this because there's no way to get a handle on the finances, yeah. is what you just said, you know, I would prefer we do it this way. I would prefer we give money to workers who are already here or do different programs. Is that a political statement?
No, it's a fact. My job is to evaluate the performance of a program. And if I can't answer the question, how are we doing, then I can't recommend it. Just can't do it. It would be nonsensical and irresponsible.
How would you do a performance audit on a program that gave a financial incentive of a similar amount to workers who are discouraged or in those categories that you just mentioned?
That are currently in Vermont? Mm-hmm. Well, we know that we didn't have to pay them to come here. They're already here. Then we could measure their advancement in the job market. They started not employed at all. A year from now, if we're successful, they're employed, they're making a buck, they're paying taxes and so forth. We don't know that with people from outside. Can't answer the question whether they would have come anyway.
We're talking with State Auditor Doug Hoffer. Again, our number, if you have a question, 800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211. Or post notes on the Vermont Edition page at vpr.org. Or you can email vermontedition@vpr.org. Dominic Cloud, the city manager in St. Albans, says, to you, Auditor Hoffer, your lack of confidence in economic development programs such as tax increment financing is well documented. Isn't it a conflict of interest, or at least the appearance of a conflict, for you to audit programs that you have previously critiqued? Vermonters may be surprised to learn that communities must pay the state auditor to conduct an audit of a TIF district. Again, TIF, of course, is the tax increment financing. Dominic goes on to say, many communities feel these audits are biased. Since communities are already paying for them, shouldn't we refer these audits to an independent accounting firm to ensure the independence of the audit?
Wow, that's a mouthful. Actually, that's in an earlier commentary in Digger. I remember that. Actually, Mr. Cloud is way off base on almost every one of those points. I'm not doing these audits because I want to. I'm doing them because the legislature requires us to do them. Also, it is the legislature that said we can and should bill the towns to do them. It's not my choice. Second, I didn't critique them. This is really a compliance audit. Whatever you think of tax increment financing, if you are a town that has requested permission from the Economic Progress Council or applied for a TIF and been approved, there are rules and you have to abide by them. That's all this audit is, period.
So do you struggle then with what you say on programs like what we were just talking about with incentives, economic development incentives, because they might then present to somebody the appearance of a bias or a perspective that is different than just here's what the data says?
No, not at all. First of all, these audits are conducted to GAGA standards by professional auditors in my staff.
GAGA standards.
Yeah, generally accepted government auditing standards. I don't conduct the audit. These people have, in some cases, 30 years experience. There's not a partisan or political bone in their bodies. And in fact, our work is reviewed, peer reviewed, as it's called, every few years. And they pass every test with flying colors. These are serious professional people. And the rules are very clear. I shouldn't say that. Sometimes they're ambiguous, as with all statutes and rules. And that's sometimes a problem for the towns. Mr. Cloud is annoyed because we did an audit and found some problems up there. And that report will be released in a week or two. It's not personal. It has nothing to do with my views about whether I think TIF is a good or bad policy. All I've said about TIF is, like some other programs, I can't determine with any certainty whether it's achieving the goals intended. Because how do we know that some of those businesses that are locating and growing in those areas wouldn't have done so anyway?
Do you believe in a leap of faith? I mean, do you believe that some things are just not going to be able to be determined by an audit, but they're still worth doing?
What I believe is irrelevant. My job as state auditor is to answer the question, can you validate the outcome?
But I mean, I guess that is your job, so you can't really be in a position of saying something is a good idea or a bad idea if you can't evaluate it. But you know, in the world, of course, there are things that are ambiguous and that you say, I don't know if this is going to work, but we got to try something. I mean, do you take a position on that philosophically in your own mind?
Well, we could talk about economic development, for example. You can't always determine the effectiveness of public education funds for every single kid that goes through the system. But I don't think there's any question that a good education is a good investment.
Let's go to Anthony, who's calling in from Marlboro. Hey, Anthony, go right ahead.
Hi, how you doing? Thanks for taking my call. I wanted to kind of go back to the Vermont Health Connect discussion.
I think you have your radio on. If you turn that down, then you won't get the double talk of your own voice.
Sorry about that.
No problem.
Okay. I wanted to ask about the responsibility of the folks put in charge to implement the collection of the invoices. I pay currently around $1,000 a month for Blue Cross Blue Shield on Vermont Health Connect. And if I miss a payment, I lose my coverage. And, you know, this is taxpayer money paying for these folks to do this job. And I want to know what kind of checks and balances, you know, are out there to protect my tax dollars being paid for the positions and for the Dr. Dinosaur.
Yeah, Anthony, you got it. And for anybody who missed that earlier part of the conversation, we were talking about the auditor's report on Dr. Dinosaur, the publicly funded healthcare program for children and for pregnant women in Vermont. And some people, depending on income, have to pay premiums as part of their coverage. And what the auditor's office found was that the state has not been consistent in collecting premiums or knowing who has outstanding premiums. And, you know, Anthony makes a good point that for many of us who are paying premiums for healthcare, if we don't pay, we don't have coverage. And so if the state is sort of saying, well, you know, oh, oops, you know, Anthony is frustrated by that. What do you think, Auditor?
Well, Anthony poses a good question. For me, Anthony, all we can do is issue the reports and hope that the recommendations are well supported by the facts and hope that the administration adopts our recommendations. And we do track that over time, by the way. I don't have a magic wand, nor do I, like the Pope, have any legions. I can't compel anybody to do anything. As for accountability, I think you'll find that everybody in state government who works in that sphere, healthcare, is well aware of the continuing problems with the Vermont Health Connect. And a lot of money has been spent and a lot of effort devoted to solving the problems first identified now 6 years ago. Is that enough accountability for you? It sounds like it's not, but
You know, when you say you don't have the ability to command people to do what you recommend, this might be a good moment to ask, you know, when the auditor's office comes out with a report and says, here are the things that we found that are not going right, and specifically with performance audits. So we're not talking about a fiscal audit, but a performance audit, like this system is not working well. You have no ability to say, and you must do X to fix it.
We can say that. We don't say you must. We say you should, in our opinion, but they are not obligated by law to take our recommendations. I'm happy to say that each year we go back and look at 1 and 3 years back, and over 75% of our recommendations are implemented. Some are not.
You've been looking at a few recommendations from a few previous audits recently on those 1 and 3 year checks. I mean, Dr. Dinosaur was kind of one of those to begin with anyway. You looked at that a couple years ago.
In a way, yes.
So what else have you found that either has or has not been implemented?
Well, we had a kind of an interesting audit of the Department of Human Resources and also the Agency of Human Services, which had its own, at that time its own investigative crew, with regard to employee misconduct allegations. And it's a serious topic. And one of the many aspects of it is that in a hypothetical here, if Jane and I work together and I am alleged to have harassed Jane, then my boss understandably might say, I don't know what the answer is or what happened here. We're going to investigate. But while that investigation is underway, Doug, you should probably go home and leave the workplace. That's perfectly reasonable. I get it. You don't want to abuse that, but there are times when that's appropriate.
And in this case that you're talking about, you're suspended with pay.
Yes, that's called temporary relief from duty. And while I'm out, there's an investigation. The report from the investigative crew is then provided to the appointing authority, either the deputy commissioner or the commissioner, and they make some decision about discipline, if any, and if so, what level. What we found is that the system works pretty well for the most part, but there are times when the investigations take longer than they should. But there are also times when the time between the delivery of the investigative report and the decision is extended. Now, there are instances, as you can imagine, where that's a result of somebody exercising their legal rights. Maybe it's going to go to the Labor Relations Board and or to court. So that's fine. But there are others where we couldn't see any reason why it took so long. So when we looked at this, it was several years back now, but I got updated figures. So over the last 4 years, relief from duty has cost the state $7 million. We made some recommendations as to how the Department of Human Resources could do better record keeping, follow up on them, develop some standards and so forth. And they came back and said, we're not going to do that. And we inquired, because that was a while back, we inquired again and said, you know, have you made the changes since? And they said, no, we're not going to do that.
What's their reasoning for that?
They gave us no reason. They said, we're not going to do that. So all I could do, back to Anthony's question, is I shared that information in a memo, along with other information about other audits and departments, with the House Government Operations Committee and said, if you'd like, here's some information. You may want to invite them in and have a conversation. They may well have a perfectly good reason. I don't know what it is. It doesn't make sense to me because I thought our recommendations were perfectly reasonable. But that's beyond that. In fact, I've been thinking about this. I can go to the Agency of Administration, of which DHR is a part, and communicate directly with the Secretary of Administration, which is all that's left for me.
Well, you also go to the press. You write op-ed columns in
DT Digger
and stuff. Yeah, so you know, you have the ability to say to the public, here's what I recommend, or here's what my office is doing, here's what has been implemented or not been, and then hope that there's a, you know, either an outcry or a consensus. Yeah. I'm Jane Lindholm, and this is Vermont Edition. Today we're talking with State Auditor Doug Hoffer about some of the investigations and inquiries his office is conducting, Dr. Dinosaur, EB5, waterways cleanup programs, and more. WR posted in 2014 approximately $50,000 due to local solid waste districts when unpaid through the electronics recycling contract. The administrator was paid, the recycler was paid under protest, but no one pursued payment for the solid waste districts. A whistleblower contacted Hoffer about it. Any news?
From 2014, forgive me. I still have active neural pathways, but I don't remember that one.
Oh, so no, yeah, nothing springs to mind on
no,
that?
All right. Sorry.
And let's go to Thomas, who's calling in from Derby. Hi, Thomas. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. Just a quick question. And speaking with many people, oh, half a dozen or so, if not a little more, I'm wondering if there was some sort of problem with the tax returns and people stating that they were not getting a return simply because they were overpaid by, let's say, food stamps or something of the sort. Was there a glitch in the system that we're aware of, or is this just the norm, it seems?
Thomas, hang on the line for a second. Auditor Hoff, do you understand what his question is?
I think so, but that's not a subject we've investigated. We did do an audit of the tax department a while back, but it wasn't about this particular subject.
So if Thomas wants to know more, where should he go?
He should start with the tax department for sure. But if he doesn't get satisfaction, he should give me a call.
All right, Thomas, you got it there. You know, we were talking earlier about how you look back at investigations that you've done and reports that you've put out, and you can't mandate that somebody change based on what the auditor's report says. Can you talk a little bit more as well about what you actually do, how you get the investigations, how you determine them? You mentioned that in some cases, in many cases, you're mandated to do these investigations. But in terms of prioritizing and determining, well, this year we're going to tackle X, how does that work in the auditor's office?
It's a mixed bag. There are recommendations or suggestions from my senior staff and other staff as well. Some of it's ripped from the headlines, as they say. Some of it is perhaps in three instances I can think of, whistleblowers directed our attention to an issue that we thought was worthy of our time, which is not cheap. These folks are paid well, so we can't just do everything. For example, that $50,000 thing with the folks, that's probably not cost effective for us to do that, although I could look into it myself. And there are certainly instances where we say, you know, in my knowledge, or certainly in my tenure and my predecessor, no one has looked at this particular department or program, and we have to cover the ground as best we can. There are some things we're doing now or in the planning process for that are just too big to ignore. You've heard of too big to fail, it's too big to ignore, and one of them is the lake cleanup, for example. There's a lot of talk about how to pay for it, but I haven't seen as much information in the public media about, well, we've already invested $100 million. What have we used it for and what kind of results have we had? So we're going to be doing that. We are doing that. And we'll have a report in a couple of weeks. Another one.
And that's not an audit. That's an inquiry. Is that right?
This is what's technically referred to as a non-audit inquiry. The research is no less rigorous, but we don't have to meet the rather onerous GAGAS standards in terms of documentation and planning. And those take forever, 6 to 8 months. These can be done in a couple of months.
Is that your determination to do it as an inquiry, or is that
yes,
based?
That's
okay.
Mine.
Yeah. Okay. All right. And what else? I interrupted you.
Well, that's quite all right. We are also, this is going to be a full-blown GAGAS audit, but, you know, the ACO process is based on a decision that the state has made in concert with the federal government and the legislature's on board.
This is Accountable Care Organization.
Right.
We're back to health care now.
Yeah, successive governors and so forth. And in concept, it's perfectly reasonable. They're trying to move away from fee-for-service to a model that will require the providers to get better outcomes without spending quite as much money. So I'm supportive of the idea, but it involves upwards of $1 billion. And, you know, I think it's appropriate that my office, since we're completely independent and not involved in the process directly, take a look at this at stages along the way. And we can do that. We have the authority. And DVA, the Department for Vermont Health Access, is in a contract right now with One Care Vermont, which is Vermont's ACO, which is heading towards being a monopoly, which is another issue that should concern people. So we're going to be doing some work in that area. We're trying to get up to speed. It's immensely complicated. We're not sure what our objectives are going to be, but I'll announce that probably in the next month or so.
That audit of One Care, there was some question about whether or not you could audit it. And it sounds like some of that confusion arose from legislation that you were advocating for in Montpelier that would have expanded access to information about One Care, which, again, is Vermont's accountable care organization. But that wasn't meant to say that you couldn't audit the information that's already there or that you couldn't audit One Care.
Yeah, some folks got a little excited. That was kind of interesting and telling, I think. I asked the vice chair of the House Healthcare Committee if she would sponsor a bill that's really just about two paragraphs long and basically expands my existing authority to get access to information for audit purposes a little beyond what it already reads. And that is because every contract that the state enters into with an entity providing services, including the hospitals and the One Care Vermont entity, includes audit provisions that says at some point you shall provide any and all information relevant to the performance under this contract to an entity that wants to audit, which is me, generally, although the other folks can on occasion. So I know what's going to happen if and when we get to One Care Vermont. We probably won't start there. We'll probably start with DVA or the Green Mountain Care Board. We'll say we'd like the following, you know, 37 documents, and they'll say, well, you know, half of them you can't have. I'm not saying they're bad people, but that's what large organizations do. They resist those kinds of requests. So I said, let's just cut to the chase and save some time and get the legislature to give us that additional authority. Some took that to mean, in fact, there was a really interesting editorial from a paper up in the northern part of the state that was entitled Hoffer's Power Grab, which I got a big kick out of. I asked my staff, did I lose my power? Where did my power go? Because I have almost none, as I pointed out before. But in this case, we do have the authority to audit. It's in contract and it's in statute. The question is, how deep can we go into these organizations? And in the case of OneCare, they are massive. If you look at it on the wall, you'll see that there's a dozen interrelated organizations. Some are for-profit, some are not-for-profit. They share board members. And if you're really looking to follow money, you're going to hit a wall. You're going to hit multiple walls. So that's what that was about. And there was a lot of misunderstanding. But that didn't, I mean, within minutes, the Hospital Association and others jumped all over the idea and me, which is very telling, I think.
And so, yeah, that didn't move forward. Not happening.
Not yet.
In the first half of the biennium, at least. Paul's calling in from Worcester. Hey, Paul.
Hey. Thanks for taking the call. I wondered, you mentioned, and forgive me if you've already answered this earlier in the show. I just joined in. But, I'm wondering if Mr. Hoffer's reports are all available to the public, and would there also be something that kind of posts what his venue is or the calendar or the schedule for, you know, organizations or programs that he's auditing? Is that available to the public or not?
Paul, thanks for the question.
Yeah, thanks, Paul. Yes, indeed. The website includes all of the performance audits. It includes all of the non-audit inquiries. It includes all our contracts. It includes a few commentaries by me about subjects related to our work. It includes just about everything I can think of, including our professional standards manual, information about the staff, and so forth. And furthermore, I'm glad you asked about, I don't know how you characterized it, but the calendar, for lack of a better word. Yes, there is a page on the website called Work in Progress that shows every job we've done since I took office, when it was initiated, when it was completed. It's graphic. It's easy to see and follow. And it includes, again, performance audits, non-audit inquiries, also the financial audits of the CAFR and the compliance audits, the so-called single audit. So it's all there. Thank you for asking.
So something like OneCare, which you said you are anticipating getting to, would that be on as well? Like the things, you know, our wish list of here's what we hope to do or plan to
do? Once we start, I enter it as an audit in progress, and we indicate in just a couple of sentences what the audit objectives are. Yes.
Can you describe the difference between a performance audit and a fiscal audit and why your office does the performance audits, but you sort of farm out the financial audits?
Years ago, as this was the case and still is in some states, our office participated in the audit of the state's financial statements, which is called the CAFR. And Wall Street needs that, likes that. It's important. It's kind of cookie cutter. It's complicated. It's not easy by any means, but it's not nearly as much fun as performance audits. The other major responsibility of the office is the federal single audit, the A-133. We, like other states, receive a lot of money from the feds, and they have a lot of strings and requirements and rules and regulations, and you have to abide by them, and you have to report. So every year, the CAFR report and the A-133 are conducted under contract. It used to be KPMG for many years. We've just switched to another firm. So that leaves us free to do the fun part, which is performance auditing. If that wasn't the case, I wouldn't be sitting here.
Let's go to Andrew, who's calling in from Essex Junction. Hi, Andrew. You have a question?
Yes. You mentioned the EB-5 program. I believe that's about the construction jobs up in Jay Peak area. Those contractors that did the work up there. I was wondering if they ever got paid.
Yeah, Andrew, thanks for the call. So Auditor Hoffer, first, Andrew's question about contractors, part of the problem here was that they were not getting paid for the work they were doing as part of this alleged fraud.
Yeah, you'd have to check with the receiver on the details, but I'm pretty sure that all those contractors have been paid. About subcontractors, I don't know. But that's the good news. And I, like you, I was concerned about that as well. EB-5 is a massive problem. Fortunately, it didn't involve a lot of public money, but nevertheless, it's an embarrassment to the state. The state was responsible for overseeing that, and there were questions about the state's oversight. So while that was still is in litigation, but recently or last year, a civil suit was resolved with the Attorney General's office with Quiros and Stenger. And at that point, the Attorney General invited me to join him for a press conference in Newport by the lake. It was lovely. But he basically said, I've done my part. I want to turn this over to the auditor who can go to the next level, because he was still responsible for five or six defendants in a suit that is continuing. He's now at the state Supreme Court. So normally we do not do audit work that involves active litigation. In this case, I said, it's going to take forever to do the work, and hopefully the litigation will end. So let me start now. And we're well into it. We've already reviewed 700,000 documents. And the goal at first was just to identify the ones that are relevant to our work. And we've done most of that. And I can't tell you, you know, how long it's going to take, but we're working hard.
And you won't reveal what you have found until the litigation is concluded.
Correct.
And basically, the scope of your investigation is, what did the state know and when did it know it?
And furthermore, and most important, what did they do once they became aware of the problems?
All right. And so we will find out what you have found out when and if this all gets settled
in
court. Indeed,
yes.
State Auditor Doug Hoffer, appreciate your time. Appreciate you telling us a little bit about what you do in your office. Thank you very much.
My pleasure. Thank you.